It's good to see everyone this morning. It's a beautiful morning, beautiful day, and we have a good number present. We have visitors. It's always good to see you as well, and we have those that are watching online either this morning or later this week. I notice a lot of people tune in later in the week, and I'm not sure if it's because of where they're at in the world, because there are people outside the United States, I think, that are viewing our streaming. So anyway, it doesn't matter, but it's good to see that people are going on there and tuning in and listening. You know, I'm going to talk to you about an interesting subject, I guess I would say. I'm going to talk a little bit about slavery this morning. And as we all know, that slavery is part of the history of this country and even many countries throughout the world, and has been probably since the beginning of time. Since Genesis, we see slavery introduced. And, you know, how we view slavery in this country, I think, influences how we view it in other parts of the world and other time periods. You know, when it comes to history, there are a lot of things that influence our understanding of that. One of them can be our age. Another thing that influences that is who we listen to, right? And maybe the era that we grew up in, what was being taught in the school system at the time. You know, there was a time when I went to school where Christopher Columbus, they told me, was a pretty good guy, you know. But I guess that's changed now. You know, that's not the case anymore. So the point that I'm making is that history and our understanding of it can be different sometimes than other people's. But sometimes we look at things and we say, you know, that's the only way it is, right? And there are things that we should look at like that, like sin, right? In Ezekiel chapter 18, verse 20, Ezekiel said, "The soul that sins, it shall die." And that's always been the case, right? That has never changed. And that never will change as long as we're on this earth. Sin is going to be a problem for man, and it will cause us to lose our souls. And there's only really one way to look at sin, isn't there? But I don't think it's the case with slavery. You know, we look at slavery through the ends of what we've experienced or what we know about or what we've been taught in school or what we see on TV and how people were mistreated because of the color of their skin. Or maybe other parts of the world, how people were treated very bad because they were just part of a certain race. I can remember, I was alive, I was 5 years old when Martin Luther King made that march from Selma, Alabama to Montgomery, Alabama, 1965, and how all that was tied into the slavery of this country, what happened 150 years ago or so. And there have been documentaries and movies made about that time in our history. And even before this country was established, John Newton, that should sound familiar to you, because I know Jared knows who John Newton is, because he was the English cleric that wrote the very popular hymn, Amazing Grace. You know, he was the captain of a slave ship at one time. And then later on, subsequently became an abolitionist. But most of us are familiar with the history of slavery in this country and other parts of the world. And, you know, we see that through the lens of what we know. But, you know, slavery in Bible times might be a little bit different than it was in this country. Let me give you an example. Let's go to Genesis chapter 39 and look at a slave that we're all familiar with. Genesis 39 and verse 1. It says, "Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt." Remember, Joseph was sold into slavery by his brothers because they were jealous of him. And so it says, "And Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he was a successful man." You catch what it said there? It said that he was a man who was a slave. He had been purchased by Potiphar. His name was Joseph, and he was successful. Let's read on. It says, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian, and his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord made all he did to prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight and served him. Then he made him overseer of his house, and all that he had he put under his authority. Isn't that interesting? I'd say that's a pretty impressive resume for a slave, wouldn't you? I'd say that's a pretty impressive resume for anyone. And so my point is, here's this man who is a slave to someone. He is owned by someone. But it just so happens that he has a good relationship with his owner. And so that's a little bit different than the slavery that we've been told that happened in this country, right? That took place in our country. That's a little bit of a better of a circumstance, don't you think? But you know, if you keep reading in chapter 39 of Genesis, you'll find that that good relationship between Potiphar and Joseph, it didn't last. Because in verse 20, listen to what it says. Then Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison. So that relationship changed, didn't it? And I want you to keep that in mind as we go through this lesson this morning, that our relationship can change in that situation. Because we're going to be talking about slavery. And so what I want you to think about when we say slavery is I want you to think about servitude, completely subjecting ourselves to someone or something. A slave is someone who simply serves someone or something. And there are good relationships in that arrangement, and there are horrible relationships in that arrangement. And as we've just read, you can have a good relationship with your master or between a master and a slave, like Joseph did with Potiphar. And so Joseph had a good relationship. But this is what I want you to remember. Whether the relationship is good or whether it's not so good, the master owns the slave. The servant or the slave serves the master. That is the bottom line. And that is the only constant in that relationship. The master owns that slave. And so the point being, the slave is to serve. And a servant has a master. And whatever that master tells that servant to do, he must do it or suffer the consequences. And so, keeping that in mind, let's look at Romans chapter 6 for a moment. This is really the basis for our sermon this morning, Romans chapter 6 and verse 16. Paul says, do you not know that when you offer yourself to someone as obedient slaves, you are slaves of the one you obey, whether you are slaves to sin, which leads to death, or to obedience, which leads to righteousness? You know, talk about something that these people were familiar with. They were familiar with slavery, weren't they? It was a very common practice back in those days. And so the Apostle Paul says, don't you know? And I love that statement, because what that says to me is, you know, first of all, that's an obvious statement. In other words, he's saying this is a no-brainer for you people. You already know this. And then he goes on and basically gives us a definition for slavery. He says, don't you know that when you willingly offer yourself to be an obedient slave to someone or something, the way that a person can tell whose slave you are is by what? Is by what you do, right? Is by your actions. In other words, the proof is in the pudding. It's not by what you say. It's by what you do. We tell people things all the time, don't we? Oh, man, I'm going to start eating better. I've been saying that for at least a year now. And every Monday morning, I try to start over. Sundays are the problem, see? Or we tell people, I'm going to start exercising. I'm going to work on my temper. Well, I'm going to quit being negative. Or how about this one? I'm going to quit worrying about whatever it is. How can a person know for a fact that you're serious about what you say? Is by what you do, isn't it? They can, you know, they can just hide in the bushes, I like to say, and just watch you, right? And see if you really do follow through with what you say. You ever heard the phrase, what you do speaks so loud I can't hear what you say? I think there's a lot of truth in that, folks. And if you're a slave or you're a servant to someone or something, how will you be able to tell? By your actions. By the priority that you put on it. You know, the Apostle Paul said, we're all slaves to something. Isn't that what he said? He just said that. He said, we're all slaves to something. The question is what? And so I want us to answer that question this morning as individuals here. We are all slaves to something. And so I want us to answer the question, I am a slave to what this morning? You know, I think it's interesting that Paul didn't say, don't be a slave to anything. He didn't say that, didn't he? He doesn't suggest that it's wrong to be a slave to anyone or anything, did he? What makes it wrong is what? Who we're a slave to and what we're a slave to. Those things is what makes it wrong, right? Paul says you can be a slave to some good things out there. You can be a slave to some things that are right. Again, it doesn't have to be all bad. It doesn't always have to be pizza and ice cream and, you know, cheesecake or whatever, right? It can be some good things. So I want to talk to you this morning about being a slave to something that is not bad. It's not bad within itself. But what makes it bad, what makes it wrong, is the emphasis that we put on it. And it's because of the emphasis that we put on it that it will eventually displace what should be the most important thing in our lives, and that is our love for God. I want to talk to you about being a slave to possessions and money. Now, I know some of you are going, oh, brother, we're going to talk about this? Well, yeah, but just give me a chance here. And I'm not talking about just people in the world, folks. I'm talking about us in the church. I'm talking about us as Christians, those who profess to have an allegiance to Jesus Christ. You know, we can have just as much a problem with this issue as people of the world. And so, and the reason we can is because it is a problem of the flesh. The desire for things, it has been around since the beginning of time, since Genesis chapter 3. And it can be little things, or big things. It can be about a little money, or it can be about a lot of money. But whatever the case is, there are some people who spend their whole life chasing, as my dad would say, the almighty dollar. And they have become a slave to it. And we perpetuate this cycle because money drives everything that we do, doesn't it? It does. We live in a society, especially in this country, where money drives everything. Money drives the pharmaceutical industry. I can't believe some of the side effects on some of these medications that they're trying to push on us. I think I'd rather keep the disease than have the side effect. Money drives the recovery industry. Now, there are some good people that do what I do and are in recovery houses and things like that, but there are some who are in it just for the money. And I'm not saying this place is, but there is a place in Parkersburg that has been there for about 9 months, and they've already made $6 million through their 28-day program. Now, I'm not saying it's a bad place. I'm not saying they're just in it for the money, but money does drive a lot of this. Money drove, you know, the pharmaceutical pill industry. I think money's driving the vaccine and all this COVID stuff. I'm not trying to be political. I'm just making a point. Money drives everything in this country, everything we do. And for some of us, the more that we get, the more we want. And we're never satisfied. It's just this vicious cycle. Look at Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verses 10 and 11. He who loves silver will not be satisfied with silver. Isn't that interesting? He who loves abundance with increase, this also is vanity. When goods increase, they increase who eat them. So what profit have the owners except to see them with their eyes? How disappointing does that sound? You know, we talk and we write and we think about money just about every single day, don't we? We look at all the Zuckerbergs and the Bloombergs and the Bezos and the Elon Musk of the world. Now it's billionaires with a B. I mean, if you're a millionaire, that's nothing, right? It's billionaires now. But we fantasize about that sometimes, don't we? Be honest. You never thought about what it'd be like to have more money than you knew what to do with, all the good things you could do with it? We see articles like the 20 top self-made billionaires under 35, right? What kind of a message did that send not just to hardworking Christians, but to our children? It sends a clear message that says being rich is the ultimate goal, and the younger you are, the more successful. It's a self-feeding monster. Our children are being bombarded by selfies of entrepreneurs and self-made gurus on some remote island boarding their private jets. YouTubers and bloggers can teach you how to get rich with just a few hours a week, right? You ever seen those commercials? It's in the media. We have the lottery system. We have betting. Now in gambling and sports and in the NFL even, promoting this type of living, because after all, who wouldn't want piles of money, right? I mean, just think of all the great things we could do with it. My dad was right. There are few things more powerful than the almighty dollar. So why do we talk so much about money and possessions in the church? You ever thought about that? I mean, we used to. I don't know if we do anymore as much, but I can remember as a kid, I would hear a sermon on materialism or some form of that word, which is not even in the Bible, by the way, that word, but the concept is, isn't it? Or materialism or being rich and all this stuff. I would hear a sermon at least every quarter, four times a year, maybe once a month. Well, the reason I think we hear so much about it or we talk so much about it is because Jesus did. Do you realize that Jesus, 2,000 verses of Jesus, with Jesus talking about money, tithing, or possessions in the Bible, 2,000 verses. 16 out of 38 of Jesus' parables deal with money and possessions. Nearly 25% of Jesus' words in the New Testament deal with biblical stewardship. Now, that's not my numbers. That's a source that I looked up. And so the reason I think that Jesus talked about money is because, like time and oxygen and gravity, money's everywhere, right? It is a natural constant in our life. But even more important than that, I think the reason Jesus talked so much about money is because money has a downside to it, doesn't it? Unlike time or gravity or oxygen, money has a downside. And that is, if we become enslaved to it, if we become addicted to it, if we become a servant to it, we run the risk of losing our soul, right? So let me be honest with you this morning. It sounds kind of funny coming from a preacher, doesn't it? Let me be candid with you this morning. When I was growing up, I would hear sermons about money and materialism a lot. And I'll be honest, it turned me off. And it confused me. And the last thing that I want to do this morning is turn some people off and confuse our young people. But those sermons usually started out something like this. There's nothing wrong with having a lot of money or having money. But, and so, guys, I don't know if you've ever tried this, but have you ever apologized to your wife and said, honey, I'm sorry for what I did yesterday, But, you ever trying that? I've tried it. Didn't go over too good. Because my wife's like, listen, when you try to apologize to me and you say, but, and then you try to explain why you did what you did, it's not an apology. And so that's kind of how I feel about this. I feel that when people would talk about money or materialism, and they would say there's nothing wrong with having money, but they would go on and explain why it was wrong for all of us sitting in the pews to have money or have a lot of money or have a nice car or have a nice house. Now, again, it was probably my own twisted thinking that did that, but that's how I felt. So I'm not looking to repeat history this morning. I don't want you to walk away saying, Mark said it's wrong to have money, or I can't have nice things, or I can only have what I need and I can't have what I want. That's not what I'm saying. But I think there are a few things that we need to consider when we're talking about being a slave to possessions. Number one, I think it depends on the person that we need to consider, or or whether or not it's good for them to have a lot of money. It depends on the individual. Why? Because of their attitude towards it and their heart. Okay? Number two, what's a lot of money? Can somebody define that for me? What's too much money? Is there such a thing? I don't know. I think it'd be hard if we asked everybody in this room, what's a lot of money? We'd get a lot of different answers. But number three, it doesn't have to be a lot of money or possessions to get us sidetracked of being a slave to it. It can be a little. Think of the people that maybe are on Social Security or welfare check. And if you're in this audience this morning, this is no disrespect, but I know people that are in that situation, and man, they can't wait for the first of the month to get there. The only thing they're thinking about is that money. That's high on their priority list. So here's the thing. I think it depends on our attitude towards material things. That's what we're going to be looking at this morning. Our attitude toward it is not the amount, and it's not the thing. It's our attitude towards it, whether it be money or possessions or whatever. But the truth of the matter is it depends on our heart. So this is a difficult subject to talk to people about, and to try and get them to see that we need to be careful, because all of us can fall into this trap, folks, of being a slave to things. And I don't care if you've been a Christian for 40 years. This is a problem. This is something that can become a problem for all of us. So the thing that we need to do is we need to always be vigilant to make sure that we don't cross that line and become a slave to a harsh taskmaster, like what happened with Joseph. So God knew that this would be an important subject for us, and he wants our devotion, but he knows that at some point all of us will come face to face with the temptation to sin with money. So why is it, I think, or why would this is why I think it's so much that God had so much to say about this. So I want to look at the Bible and see what it has to say about money and our relationship to it. And I just want to say that when it comes to us becoming a slave to anything, that is a choice that we make. God's not going to force us to do anything, and the Satan can't force us to do anything either. This is a choice that we make. We become willing slaves in this arrangement. So we've been given the freedom of choice in whatever side we choose to fall on. So let's look at Matthew chapter 6 and verse 24. No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. Now, I think that sounds a lot like Romans chapter 6 and verse 16. You can't serve two masters, Jesus said. You will either love one or hate the other. We'll love one and hate the other. We can't serve God and possessions at the same time. You can only be a slave to one thing. And that word mammon there that Jesus uses, that's an interesting word. It's only found four times in the New Testament. It's only used by Jesus. So what is mammon? Well, it's an Aramaic word for wealth and poverty. And so for the sake of our discussion, let's just say mammon equals money, because that's what we use as a means of exchange in our culture today. We don't barter like we used to or like they did back then and those kinds of things. Not as much. So we'll just say mammon equals money or wealth. But the thing about money or wealth is that it is amoral. Money is amoral means money doesn't have any morals. What makes it moral or immoral is the people that use it and what they spend it on. For instance, drug money. We all know what drug money is, right? It's money that has been made by selling drugs to purchase something. Like drug dealers will buy a mansion and they will use the drug money they did, that they made from selling drugs, to buy a mansion. Blood money. We know what blood money is, right? Judas betrayed Jesus. That was called blood money, right? In Matthew 27 and 6, they wouldn't put it in the treasury because they said this is blood money because Judas had betrayed Jesus. So money is amoral. It doesn't have morals. It can be used to purchase illegal drugs that kill people, or it can be used to purchase pharmaceuticals that help people live and heal people. It's all about the way you use it. So there are a lot of things in life that are amoral, right? Meaning they're neither good nor bad. It depends on who has control of it. And so it's our relationship with money that matters. It's not the money, right? Money is not evil, like some people might think. It's not the money. It's whoever has it. It all spends the same, though, doesn't it? The only difference is the condition of our attitude in our heart. Look at what Paul told Timothy in 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 10. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. So I think what happens is when we read verses like this, we misunderstand them and we misquote them. I can't tell you how many people I've heard that misquote this verse, and they say that money is the root of all evil. That's not what this verse says. It is the love for money, or the love of money, that is the root of all evil. And so what Jesus is saying in Matthew chapter 6 and verse 24 is he's not condemning mammon, right? He's not saying that money is bad. He's saying it's our attitude towards it that makes it wrong. And the way we know that is because he's talking about being slaves and serving material possessions instead of those material possessions serving us. So we cannot be slaves of righteousness, because we can only be a slave to one thing. It's either or with God, right? He's condemning being enslaved to money and material things. So what kind of heart do we have towards money? How much effort do we put into accumulating things as opposed to doing the will of God? That's something we need to ask ourselves from time to time. You see, we should make money our slave. Money should serve us. Instead, I think sometimes we get it backwards, don't we? We've become slaves to it. He's talking about us making money our God instead of the Lord our God. And there are many people that do that in this world. And so what I'm saying to you is not just about the money. It's about the attitude that goes along with it. It can be the money, or it can be the pride that goes with it, or the prestige, or the power. Or maybe it's just the time we spend chasing it. Maybe that's the problem. Look at Proverbs 23, verse 5. Will you set your eyes on that which is not? For riches certainly make themselves wings. They fly away like an eagle towards heaven. How many of you ever seen money flying out of your checking account, right? I can relate to this verse. But it can be something small, as small and seemingly insignificant as spending all our time being busy chasing it, right? Trying to make the money to support the lifestyle that we've created. So, remember, we can only be a slave to one thing. Either we are a slave to God's righteousness, or we are a slave to sin and unrighteousness. That's it. That's the only two options. And so what you and I need to be doing we're asking ourselves on a monthly, weekly, and maybe even a daily basis is, am I serving the God of heaven? Am I enslaving myself to him and putting him first in everything that I do, including my use of my possessions? Am I doing everything in my power to make sure that God is pleased with the way that I'm trying to serve him and the way that I'm trying to live? Am I his obedient slave? For instance, when it comes to that person that I've had a falling out with several years ago or last year, last month, do I pick up the phone and take care of it? Or maybe write them a handwritten note? Or am I too busy maintaining my lifestyle that I don't even have time to think about it? When I think of the person at church that needs encouragement, maybe they could use a card or a phone call or a cup of coffee. Do I just think about it and then something else interrupts my thinking and then I forget for 2 weeks? And then I start that cycle all over again because I'm too busy worrying about my own goals and dreams in life? Am I so busy maintaining my lifestyle? Then when it comes to helping those who have financial needs, I might have the money to help them, but I don't have the time. Am I just kind of going in circles in my spiritual life because I'm too busy, concerned about the physical things of this life? What is it that keeps you from having the relationship with God that you ought to have? I would say for many people, and maybe even some in the church, many in the church today, it is their quest for stuff, for things. It may not actually be the number one thing that will cause us to lose our soul, but I think it's right up there at the top two or three anyway. Never having the time to do the Lord's work, to teach the lost, to edify people, especially our brethren, or to help those financially that need it. You know, we talk about these things, but how many of us actually take the time to follow through and to be doing those things? In Matthew chapter 16, verse 26, it says, "For Jesus says, what does it profit? For what profit is it to a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul?" So Jesus asked two questions there, and I think they're really rhetorical questions. Verse 26, "For what profit is it to a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul?" The answer is obvious. There is no profit at all, is there? As a matter of fact, we lose big time when we do that, don't we? Or how about this? "What will a man give in exchange for his soul?" Again, it's an obvious answer. There is nothing that we can give in exchange of our soul. No material things. At least nothing that will amount to anything, but you know what? People do it every day, don't they? They give things in exchange for their soul. What a lousy rate of exchange. So as I said before, I think a lot of people are going to lose their souls over their obsession for wealth. Not over wealth, but over their obsession for it. The question that all of us need to be asking ourselves this morning is, am I a slave to sin, or am I a slave to obedience? Am I a slave to material wealth, or am I a slave to righteousness? Whether mammon is wealth, pride of power, pride of glory, or the pleasures of life, you know what it boils down to? Me. That's the problem here, isn't it? Me. And so when I think that, you know what, I can make money anytime I want to, it's easy to do in this society, isn't it? And we forget who owns everything anyway and who is blessing us in this process. I think that's when we begin to have a problem. That's what happened in Nebuchadnezzar, didn't it? In Daniel chapter 4, Nebuchadnezzar said, look what I've done. Look what I'm doing. This is mine. Look at all the great things I've done. What'd God do? He humbled him, didn't he? And so, in closing, I just want to leave you with four things. Number one, God owns everything. Do you think about that much? He owns your bank account. He owns your house. He owns everything. He doesn't just own this. We're like, well, we got to be good. We got to be good stewards with the Lord's money. What about the money in our bank account? Should we not be good stewards of that too? It's God's. Exodus 19:5. Now therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be a special treasure to me above all people, for all the earth is mine. Since God is the rightful owner of everything, that means that the money that I have actually belongs to him. Number two, money comes with a warning. Okay? So if we're not careful, it can be easy for us to place our hope in money. Money is simply or something that we can hold in our hand and we can look at in our bank account and we can feel the weight of its absence when we don't have enough, right? But we can also feel self-sufficient when we have an abundance. Money does change our attitude, doesn't it? So the Bible warns us not to put your hope in money. It says things like, be careful. Guard your heart. Don't be a fool with your money. And when it comes to money, wealthy people, they're not the only people that have to worry about this, folks. All of us do. It can be a little or it can be a lot. Number three, money is about discipline. You know, when you think about money, money's simply just a tool that we use, isn't it? It's to help us to live and to prosper and to live like Jesus, right? We're to help other people with our funds. Regardless of how much or how little we have, God is at work in our lives and he's helping us through our circumstances. And he is teaching us to trust him. He is supplying us, just like Joseph trusted him. I think that's what Paul's trying to tell us here in Philippians chapter 4. Verses 11 and 12, not that I speak in regard to need, for I have learned in whatever state I am to be content. I know how to be abased. I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things, I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. See, Paul said the secret is contentment. In whatever state we're in, we need to trust God that he is going to take care of us. You might be struggling financially this morning. You may be swimming in financial abundance this morning, or maybe you have a wrong relationship with money. Maybe you have a love for money that isn't healthy. Regardless of our situation, I really do think that our faith is connected to our money. In Luke chapter 12, in verse 34, it says, for where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. The last thing that I want us to remember is that we need to fight for contentment. I don't think contentment is something that just comes naturally all the time. I don't know about you, but I think it's hard for a lot of us to be content. It is for me. Be content with ourselves, be content with our work or our families, or even with our possessions. You know, we were watching TV the other night, and Kohl's commercial came on. And you know what the slogan for it was? Gotta have it. That's the culture that we live in, folks. You see it? You gotta have it, right? We are bombarded with a slew of messages and images from all around us to entice us to pursue something better, right? Grass is always greener on the other side. From wanting a new car to getting a bigger house or coveting a promotion at work, the world that we live in compels us to be dissatisfied with who we are and with what we have. So discontentment is Doesn't sound like a big deal on the surface, does it? But it's a subtle sin that leads us to desire more and want something different. And it can lead to a lot of different sins. It can lead to unnecessary debt. It can lead us to cheat on our spouse. And it can help or have us make unwise decisions at work in an attempt to get ahead. A whole lot of different things. So, we're going to end the lesson there. And listen, I just want you to know that I hope you don't walk away from the sermon saying, well, Mark said that it's wrong to have stuff. And that's not what I'm saying at all. I'm saying check your attitude when it comes to your stuff, when it comes to your money, when it comes to your possessions. So the last thing we're going to leave you with is a list of things to remember. Slavery is about servitude. It's about serving. And we are bombarded with the pressure to accumulate things in our culture today. And Jesus talked a lot about money and possessions, and he did that for a reason. And we need to be vigilant. It doesn't matter how long we've been a Christian. We need to always be vigilant against becoming a slave to things. The condition of our attitude and heart is the key here. And we need to ask ourselves, am I a slave to sin or a slave to righteousness? And God owns everything. Money comes with a warning for a reason. And money is about discipline. And we need to fight for our contentment. If you're here this morning and you're not a Christian, I can tell you what side you're on. You're not a slave to obedience. You are a slave to sin. And you need to change that this morning. If you are a Christian and you've crossed back over, maybe you've let money become your master or something else, and you're living in sin, we'd like to help you with that as well. If we can help you this morning, please come to the front while we stand and while we sing.